Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio.
Welcome to X Squared Radio, my good friends. This is Brooks Agnew coming to you live from east of the Appalachian Mountains, an undisclosed location. I apologize for the quality of my voice tonight. I am getting over whatever you've been getting over, the plague, whatever it is. It works hardest on the voice and the upper respiratory system, but we're slugging our way through it, so you're going to slug your way through it with me tonight. The solar wind is a mild 352.3 kilometers per second, and the proton count is down very low, less than one proton per cubic centimeter. Solar activity remains low despite sunspots 1330's magnetic potential for M-class solar flares. A very slow-moving coronal mass ejection billowed away from the sun's northeastern limb during the early hours this morning. The cloud is not, however, headed for Earth. There were some spooky auroras, however, as some observers are calling it the almost Halloween storm. Blood-red auroras that filled the skies over parts of the United States and Europe. Last week, October 24th and 25th, were certainly spooky. The aurora stretched as far south as Louisiana, but cloudy skies prevented it from being seen by most people. A very bright coronal mass ejection blasted off the sun on October 22nd, and it appears to be headed for Mars. Analysts at the Goddard Space Weather Lab expect the cloud to reach the red planet on October 26th. So if you have anything up there, you might want to move it out of the way or cover it up with a piece of metal. Mars has a unique response to solar storms, shaped by the planet's strange magnetic topology. Unlike Earth, which has a global magnetic field we call the magnetosphere, Mars is patchily covered by dozens of magnetic umbrellas, remnants of an overarching planetary field that decayed billions of years ago. When Mars gets hit by a CME, the resulting magnetic storms take place in the umbrellas. Circumstantial evidence collected by Mars Global Surveyor in the 90s suggests that the tops of the umbrellas light up with bright ultraviolet auroras during such storms. Because the structures are distributed around the planet, these auroras can appear even at the equator. Mars rovers and satellites should be alert for aurora equatorialis on October 26th, about 4 days ago. Magnetic umbrellas are at the heart of Mars's greatest mysteries. What happened to the atmosphere? Well, scientists think that billions of years ago, the air on Mars was thick enough to protect vast expanses of water on the planet's surface. Now, however, probably due to armies of SUVs driving around the planet, The atmosphere is 100 times thinner than Earth's, and the surface is bone dry. Some researchers believe that magnetic storms in the umbrellas could rip parcels of atmosphere away from Mars and propel air-filled magnetic bubbles into space. In this way, space weather could be directly responsible for the desiccation of the red planet. Boy, glad we're one orbit away from the sun than Mars is. In a bit of economic science, and we're studying this because the mathematics of this, the algorithms of complex economics are so fascinating. I'm not an economist, I'm not an accountant, but I am a mathematician, and how these various variables work in the equation are quite fascinating. It's interesting because in anticipation of problems within the equation, the statement of the possibility of a downgrade or an upgrade or a recovery or a downfall or a second recession, the statement of the possibility of that occurring affects the mathematical equation as well. So you would think that some people would have a responsibility, a sense of dignity about them, that they would perhaps not want to manipulate the market one way or the other, unless, of course, they had something to gain from it. Just by way of information, you should know, you have heard the term hedge fund a lot. This does not mean a hedge around the yard that you trim nice and square as a natural barrier between you and your neighbors. A hedge, in the terms of financial world, means that you are protecting yourself against any possible downside. What a hedge fund normally does is they will select a few stocks that they want to invest in that they know are going to make money. But just in case, they hedge the bet by betting against other stocks that they know are going to go down. And in case you don't know this already, it's tremendously more difficult to make a stock go up than it is to make it go down. All you have to do to make it go down is just let a little dirt slip into the air or into the public service announcements about a various company, one or the other, and the stock will slide. The shareholders will sell, driving the price of the stock down. So hedge funds actually manipulate the market by using market makers. Market makers are people to whom the market listens for forecasting information. By using market makers to leak dirt or leak bad press or government failings or lawsuits or potentials of lawsuits to the shareholders. So the shareholders will then sell that stock, thus driving it down. And when it drives it down, the hedge actually makes money because it is bet against that stock. Now, to make matters even more tricky, you don't have to actually even own the stock. What you can do is you can short the stock. In fact, the way regulations are so lax right now, or should I say, not the regulations, but the enforcement of the regulations are so lax right now, you not only do not have to own the stock, but you can naked short the stock, which means you can get a brokerage house, like say Fidelity or Citigroup, to just fake buy the shares, like you sort of own them. And since you're shorting them, which means you're betting that they're going to go down, you have a put option on these stocks. When the stocks go down, you actually make money even though you don't own the stocks. In fact, the worst thing that can happen to a hedge fund is for the hedged funds, the hedged stocks, to actually go up. That's why when Warren Buffett put his money into Bank of America, even though there were several hedge funds trying to take Bank of America down, in other words, they had bet against Bank of America. Bank of America was the hedge. Warren Buffett put his money in, forcing the stock to go up. Once it went past the call limit, the hedge funds had to put money in by actually buying the stock, by actually making the buy good. And so the hedges limped away, licking their wounds after Mr. Warren Buffett was through with them. It was a good day for America. But in an analyst note, Bank of America, M.L. Ethienne S. Harris, drops a bit of a bombshell prediction. We expect a moderate slowdown in the beginning of next year, 2012, as two small policy shocks, another debt downgrade, and fiscal tightening hit the economy. Now, in case you don't know what this means, the United States has already been downgraded once, which means those states that hold AAA bond ratings, and many states do, like North Carolina, some states do not because they've taken way too many risks with their bonds and they don't have a AAA bond rating, but some states do. The states that do, by law, can only have a bond rating one step better than the country, which means, for now, they can keep their AAA bond rating. But if the United States gets downgraded again, then those AAA bond rated states will be downgraded to AA. That will be absolutely devastating to their state economies. They will not be able to raise money inside the state for things like schools, roads, bridges, parks, things that the city and state need, because they won't have the bond rating to attract the investors. Deficit commission is the not-so-super deficit commission. This is the super 12 that they have. Is very unlikely to come up with a credible deficit reduction plan. The committee is more divided than the overall Congress, since the fallback plan is sharp cuts in discretionary spending. We call these austerity measures. It's sort of like taking the credit card away from the kids, okay? It definitely affects the economy. The whole point of the committee is to put taxes and entitlements on the table. However, all the Republican members have signed the Norquist No Taxes Pledge, and with taxes off the table, it's hard to imagine the liberal Democrats on the committee agreeing to significant entitlement cuts. The credit rating agencies have strongly suggested that further rating cuts are likely if Congress does not come up with a credible long-run plan to reduce the debt. We're not just talking about the deficit. We're not talking about not spending more money than we take in anymore. That's long overdue. Now we have to start reducing the debt. Interest rates are low, a record low, and that's the only thing saving us right now. If interest rates were to creep back up even just a little bit, the interest payments would be so high we could not take in enough revenue to meet the interest. Hence, we expect at least one credit downgrade in late November or early December when the super committee crashes. This is quite a stunning prediction, mainly because nobody is talking about this except right here on X Squared Radio. And though the experts were 100% wrong in thinking that a downgrade would increase borrowing costs, it did cause a major market jolt when it happened, leading to a major blow to confidence in August and September. Now, I don't want you to make any mistake. Do not be deceived by this, people. Earth explorers, you need to listen very closely. A 12,000 Dow does not make one bit of difference. It is not an indication of the market. It is only an indication that the stocks are being manipulated by computer traders. It doesn't mean that there's real money in the market. It only means that the brokers and brokerage houses are making money. That's it. That's all it means. It's not an indication of financial strength. And if you don't believe me, walk down to your bank, I don't care which one, and try to borrow money. You'll see. Another round of this market jolting would certainly not be helpful. Now, one of the nice things about computer trading is that the computer trades much faster than the human can trade. It sees trends. It makes micro trades, sometimes a couple times a day, certainly several times a month. A human cannot watch the market that closely. A human wouldn't care about a fraction of a percent per day in rise in value. But that's what computers do. And if the computers can be made to switch, that is to cooperate with one another, then they can incrementally manipulate stocks back and forth until they go up or down, just as the computers want them to happen. The trades happen so fast, I'll tell you how fast they happen. When I visited the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, the LIGO, in Louisiana, Livingston, Louisiana, I met with Dr. Kip Thorne. Now, not the Kip Thorne that actually founded those structures, but the PhD computer technologist that was setting up the computer systems for the switching to manage the data between all of the observatories around the world so that they can have a real-time look at space using the parallax of various locations around the planet. The switcher, that is to say the electronics that are used to control all those servers talking at once, is as fast as anything in the world. It's identical to the one used by Wall Street. That will give you an idea how sophisticated, how quick, how microsecond exact these trades must be in order to make it work. Well, when you manipulate the market up, there's only one place for it to go, and that's down. It's called profit taking. Buy low and, that's right, sell high. And right now, the market is high. And when these Christmas shopping numbers begin to come out next week and the week after, you will see that sales are down. This is exactly the kind of news that they look for. They put it in the algorithm, they run the equation, and the computers begin to sell. Now, computers are by safety, so that we don't have another 1929, are prevented from overselling. But they can sell. And when they sell, the brokers, the brokerage houses, and the investors make trillions of dollars. That's where the value in the market is. Only in the trading. The companies for which those stocks are named make nothing. Not a penny off of these stocks. These stocks are traded between owners of the stock. The company doesn't see a dime. As for the immediate term, the Harris poll, sees 2.7% GDP for quarter three, the advance estimate for which will be released this coming Thursday, and 2.3% for quarter four. 2.7 and 2.3, people, that's not growth. That's life support. Now, when will the crash of Wall Street happen? When? A string of European bank collapses is dead ahead. Now, we've heard about Greece. I think you may have heard about Italy. Italy is a much bigger problem. Spain, France, Germany, Belgium, all of these countries are on the verge of this kind of collapse. Now, George Soros has been recently quoted as saying that we should just let it happen, but in a controlled manner, to move Europe away from the euro. We cannot let that happen. We moved into the euro as a 30-year financial plan to move the countries away from economic differences, to protect each country from currency differences. the exchange rate was destroying the value from country to country. And this is why we moved away from it. This is what has been at the root cause of almost every war that's been fought in Europe and later engulfed the world. And like the Arab Spring, they will trigger an economic disaster for American banks. Why? Because American banks have moved most of their prime money into the Europe market. Now, what does that mean? Well, first of all, it means I need to take a drink of water, so hold on. Now, you would think this would be a really simple problem, that it would be something like money in, money out, value in, value out, some leadership, some great man being able to stand up and say, it's okay, everything's all right, please return to the mall. But it isn't like that. You have very, very big powers manipulating this money back and forth, not to be able to buy more property, to be able to buy the world. Most of this is centered around a little group of private banks which make up an organization which go by a very deceptive name called the Federal Reserve. Now, some of these names might be familiar to you, but if you want to go all the way back to the Revolutionary War, you'll remember from your civics classes that there were leaders at the time that wanted a world bank. They wanted a national bank. They wanted something that had national borrowing power, global borrowing power, the ability to tax a nation, tax a world, to be able to charge interest on a world. Well, that was shot down, although in principle it was accepted by fiat, or should I say by constitutional law, it was forbidden. We didn't even really like the fact that we were getting interstate banks. But we couldn't help ourselves. Large private banks in a state then became part of large state banks. And then state banks became interstate banks. And then interstate banks became regional banks. Then regional banks became national banks. And now they are global banks. The owners of those banks are a very, very small group of men. And make no mistake, they are buying the debt of the world, which means the world is enslaved to this group. Andrew Milliken, head of global strategy at Standard Life Investments, discusses the implication for banks as European officials try to hammer out a solution to the sovereign debt crisis. Yes, coming soon, says Martin Weiss in his, quote, Seven Major Advanced Warnings, which is bound to have a life-changing impact on nearly all investors in the U.S. and around the globe. His new Weiss ratings, warnings, are the most important in a 40-year career. The stress on Wall Street banks will force them back to Congress for more bailouts from the American taxpayers. That's right. That's right. Greece, Italy, Germany, Belgium, Spain, and there may be others that are having banking problems, having debt problems because for a variety of reasons, they're not selling, people are not working, too many people on welfare, not enough going out, not enough coming into the government, too much going out. In other words, not enough taxes, not enough taxpayers, or too high of taxes, not enough taxpayers, and way, way, way too many people with their hands in a cash drawer. There's only one country on the planet that everyone turns to. No, it's not Germany. It's not Germany. I know you heard about that last week. It's not Germany. It's you. It's us. It's the American people. That's where the Wall Street banks will come back to. Warning number 8. No new bailouts. That, if we draw that line, if that becomes a campaign promise, if that becomes the reason you reach forward and grab that handle and pull that blue or red handle, that will push the economy into a deep recession. Now, we're already in the worst post-war recession in history. We bounced back from the other ones. Every little war we had, we have a post-war recession, but we bounced back from it. But in 2008, we lost more jobs than all the other post-war recessions combined. All of them combined. We were pushed to such an unbelievable artificial bubble, which was absolutely forced larger and larger and larger by subprime mortgages, laws which forced banks to loan money who had no business borrowing money. We allowed them to overmortgage their houses. We allowed them to get second mortgages, third mortgages, reverse mortgages, interest-only mortgages. We thought that the value of property would increase forever. And we knew better. We knew better. And while we were going through the 90s, just like it was the roaring 20s, as regulations were taken off right and left, investors went absolutely nuts. People were buying and selling dot-coms like they were gold stocks. Why? Because the regulations had been lifted. All of this had been deregulated. And toward the end of the Clinton presidency, when the bubble popped, Bush inherited a recession that was going to be the worst we had ever seen. And then, in 2001, we were attacked. Nothing brings America more closely focused, more closely knit, than when we are attacked on our own soil. By 2002, you couldn't buy an American flag anywhere. They were all sold out and they were flying. And it was only through 24-hour-a-day usurpation and propaganda that the Democrat Party was able to tear down everything that had been built during those 3 years. By 2006, by 2004, Bush was in the fight of his life. And by 2008, it was all over for the Republican Party. The Democrats took over again, and we lost more jobs than any post-war recession ever. Ever. And we have not recovered yet. It's now effectively 2012, and we are still not recovering. Unemployment rate looks the way it does because a lot of people have given up. I don't mean they've given up and died. I mean they gave up and said, this is enough. I have to eat. I got to pay my mortgage. I got to put my kids through school. I like eating. And so they went out and they made up jobs. They started their own businesses. They painted houses. They cut grass. They cut hair. They hauled trash. They did remodeling. They became a cash society, diving into a subculture of sociology, which has literally changed the fabric of the United States. States like North Carolina have more single-location businesses than in its history, and probably than any other state in the nation. Texas, unbelievable growth in small business. Why? Because people can't find work. But they don't sit around and ask for a handout. Because we're Americans. We don't do that. We don't go to the streets and riot like Greeks saying, I want my free lunch. We know better. We pull our own selves up. We put our own boots on and we go out and we get a job. Or we make a job up. We find the value in our society and we do it. And usually it starts with the jobs nobody else wants to do. So as we climb into this recession, and I think the unemployment numbers really are closer to 17%, then what? The new Glass-Steagall? Not enough. Tax the rich? Not enough. Perp walks? Not enough. Presidential commission? Useless promises. Occupy Wall Street will fail. Right after these snowflakes melt, you will see the tent cities going away without a fundamental constitutional change. No compromise. Or Wall Street wins. Again, we go back to the same free market, deregulated, too greedy to fail conservative Reaganomics policies that have been destroying democracy for a generation. Now, if you honestly believe that, if you believe that chaos and anarchy is the answer, I suggest you take a week off work and go join those people in Wall Street. March on the capitalism that has made this country great, if you feel that's where the weakness is. These companies are too greedy to fail because they don't sell to you. No, they buy and sell each other. Like giant economic ruby red-lipped whores, they sell each other to one another. Bargaining and gambling back and forth, they manipulate the market with microsecond changes in value. All this was so obvious, so predictable. America is now at a crossroads. Occupy Wall Street buildup has emerged as America's last great hope to restore democracy. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Rapes, robberies, prostitution, vagrancy, that is the last great hope to restore democracy? This unbridled, chaotic, we have no message group of vagrants, of minimum wage people that fill the parks and dare the police to beat them down so they can put the video on Facebook. That's the last great hope to restore democracy? I don't think so. Last week when USA Today called the occupiers a ragtag assortment of college kids, labor unionists, conspiracy theorists, and others, hinting they're a flash in the pan devoid of remedies, this reporter smiled, reminded of that famous painting of George Washington crossing the Delaware on Christmas 1776, leading what historians called a ragtag Continental Army, surprising the Federal and waving the Battle of Trenton. Well, I gotta tell you, that reporter didn't read the history books. Because Washington may have been leading what history calls a ragtag army, but they were organized and they were centered around a millennia, multiple millennia of tradition and symbolism steeped in Freemasonry. They were fighting for a new nation, which they called the New Jerusalem. They were fighting for a nation where freedom of religion and liberty would reign, where kings and rulers could not rule by fiat, but that the people could speak to their republic and their republic would listen and represent them. America's collective conscience wants true democracy restored. It may be true. It may be true, but America is not a democracy. America is a republic. America elects representatives to go to Washington to represent neighborhoods and families and organizations and creeds and races and sends them to Washington to represent them. But when they get to Washington, there's a dynasty that is decades old that rules. And as you have seen in the last few weeks, we have an executive who is writing law, dozens and dozens of new laws every day, going around Congress, not using the constitutional process of checks and balances that we have, going around Congress and enacting deeper and more far-reaching controls over the liberties that we have in this country. If you don't believe me, buy a plane ticket sometime. Fly anywhere. You'll see the difference. Get pulled over in a roadblock and have your car searched and your documents checked, your reason to be here in this country verified through no cause. No cause to be pulled over. Your communications on cell phone, your communications on Facebook, your emails, your phone calls, everything except your letters that you mail to one another through the U.S. Post Office is being checked. Every word you say, every word you text and that you type is being parsed by computers, checking for patterns to see if you pose a risk. To whom? To what? In case you haven't noticed, your liberties have been removed in order to ensure your safety. Yes. USA Today sees a ragtag army. No mission, no goals, no organization, no agenda, no leaders, and no staying power. Wrong. Look deeper. The occupiers are the voice of America's collective conscience, demanding a return to our 1776 roots, to a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. That's the reporter's quote, and I say utter nonsense. Not a single, you couldn't find three people in a city block of any one of those protests that even knows who the founding fathers are. They couldn't quote the first sentence of the Declaration of Independence, nor do they even know the first 10 rights amendments that were made to the Constitution. No clue. No clue. It is a party. Our collective inner voice knows America's moral compass is broken. Well, true enough, it is. The whole compass is broken. Because there's nothing for it to point to. What those people that are standing in those parks and streets everywhere across America want is their fair share. I gotta tell you, people, that is not what the compass should be pointing to. The government does not owe anyone a right to a living. This country was founded upon work. No work, no live. That's right. Now, if you're incapable of working, then that's another story. But I would say 99% of the people that are occupying various parts of our country, squatting on it, are fully able-bodied working people. And they're not working. Now, they might say, I want a job. But that's not what they're really saying. What they're really saying is, I want a check. They don't want to work. They just want a check. Now, you hear cheap shots like we've become a government of, by, and for special interests. The wealthiest 1%, Wall Street insiders, CEOs, and Forbes 400 billionaires. It happened fast. In one generation, the super rich grabbed absolute power, killing the middle class American dream. Also, utter, complete propaganda and false nonsense. The middle class has been a target for millennia. Rulers hate the middle class. The financial leaders hate the middle class. Go back and do a little bit of research on 1929. When it occurred, it wasn't the mega rich that jumped out of those windows. Not at all, people. It was the middle class that jumped out the windows. The rich were smart, and they kept their money in real estate and cash. And when the market crashed, they moved in and bought what they couldn't buy a month before for pennies on the dollar. Where did they live? On steamships. Luxury steamships going back and forth between Europe and America. Oh, it was the Great Gatsby time for these people. They lived on tennis courts, polo courts, and lived on horses and fine clothes and the best scotch and cigars. They were billionaires at a time when people were working for 25 cents a day and all the potatoes they could carry home. There was no middle class. It evaporated. Well, right now, the middle class is alive and well in the United States. Yes, all the equity in our homes has been flushed down the toilet, but it hasn't been flushed down the toilet by Wall Street fat cats. It was flushed down the toilets by our own Congress. Because when people stopped making their mortgage payments, it made mortgage-backed securities that were once tradable between banks worthless. Yes, worthless. A person who owed $100,000 on a home that once appraised for $150,000 and now only appraises for $60,000, that's called being underwater. That means that if you ever go to sell your home, you have to sell it for far less than what you owe on it. Well, I'm sorry to say, you have to make up the difference. So you have a choice. Don't sell or get foreclosed on. Or make your mortgage payments. Make your mortgage payments. Well, that was all well and good till Congress got involved. Congress decided to bail the banks out. So Congress decided, well, what we will do is we will set up a fund and we will pay the banks off for everything that they lose on these foreclosures. The banks had no motivation whatsoever to collect payments. They had no motivation whatsoever to give you a second chance or make a discount or set some of those payments on the back end of the loan during these hard times so that you could catch up later, sometime during that 30-year mortgage that you hold. No. They decided to take your home from you and sell it to investors. It didn't matter what it sold for. It didn't matter if your $200,000 home sold for $30,000. Why? Because they knew the taxpayers were going to make up the $170,000 difference. No motivation, people. Nothing. They were not allowed to fail. They were not allowed to lose money. So Congress took the money from you and gave it to them. And now, these people that are occupying all of these parks, corners, sidewalks, everywhere, they want Congress to again take the money from those who have earned it, from those who have taken the risk, sometimes over generations, to build their wealth. And give it to, well, not the banks, to them. They want the wealth given to them. So what would they do with it? Buy a new car, probably. Do some drugs, have a party. Buy Super Bowl tickets. The same thing the middle class always does with their money. Do they invest it? Hell no, they don't invest it. Do they save it? You must be joking. There isn't a single person on any one of those sidewalks, on any corner, in any city park, that's squatting anywhere in this country that has two nickels to rub together, and I will place a year's pay to tell you not one of them has a savings account in their own name. Probably never have. Why? Because they think they're too poor for it. While they're complaining about it on their iPhones, wearing their designer jeans and their leather jackets. They have lived over their budget, the same as our government has done. I'm telling you, people, it is possible to have a family with four kids, pay for everything, owe nothing, stay debt-free, pay for your own health care, and make less than $40,000 a year, and stay debt-free. No, you won't be able to drive a 5 Series BMW. No, you probably won't have a smartphone. You may not even have a cell phone. You may, and I know this is going to be hard for you to take, you may not even have satellite TV. Yeah, that's right. You may not even have satellite TV. You might not even own a television. Does that make you poor? Not compared to the world. But it does make you live within your means. Can you get better? You bet you can. Go to school. Take some training. Get some experience. Keep moving up. Keep raising your income. Stay debt-free. Don't pay your money to Citibank. Don't pay your money to Bank of America or Wells Fargo or other banks that you have a credit card with. Forget about that. Don't have a credit card. I haven't had a credit card in over 10 years. Don't need one. Save your money. Stay out of debt. You talk to a person that's making $200,000 a year, and I'll bet you, dollars to donuts, that they don't have $1,000 a month in disposable income. Bet you. I'll bet you their $1,000 a month in disposable income is tied up making debt payments. Debt payments on a $500,000 home, debt payments on a $60,000 car, maybe two of them, debt payments on a student loan, not just for themselves, but also their kids, debt payments on vacation property, debt payments on credit cards, and not just credit cards, but clothing stores, charge cards, everywhere. Sure, they got good credit as long as they have that job, but they're broke, just at a higher level. So you live within your means, and our nation needs to do the same thing. Then things will turn around. Then you have a republic that works. Now, if you really want to do something, don't go out there and protest and say it's not fair that they're living up on the 101st floor and I'm down here in the soaking wet, stinking grass of this park protesting. For what? For what? For your fair share of what? What school did you go to? What risks did you take? How many losses did you suffer? How many times did you eat a poor, impoverished student meal while you were slugging your way through economics or slugging your way through political science or working to get that master's degree so you could move up in your company or buy a company? Well, you didn't. And that's why you're not where they are. You think they were lucky? You think those people that are making those $50 million commissions are lucky? I want you to go tell them that to their face. They'll probably punch you right in the nose. Because for every single deal that they tried to put together, somebody lied. Somebody withheld information. Some lawyer got greedy. Some rule was broken. And it didn't go through. It didn't close. You don't believe me? Talk to a local realtor. How many houses do you show before one sells? How many times have you wasted days, weeks with a buyer who was unqualified, didn't have the money to buy, told you that they did, told you they had a job, didn't tell you they were a credit bandit, and you wasted your time with them? Well, Wall Street does that on steroids, people. They see 100 deals a week, 100 companies a week that come to them and are trying to raise money to get started. But the owners are flamboyant. Or worse, the owners are egotistical fools who think that they should be in charge of their companies, even though they don't know anything about running a company. How many times have these brokers walked away, year after year after year, away from deals, and then they get one deal that works, one deal that closes? That $50 million commission is well-deserved, people. And when you talk about CEOs, oh, such a crying shame. Look at the CEOs. Look at the bonuses they took this year. You know why they took the bonuses? Because they laid people off. Because they were manufacturing and they were selling like crazy, but they had the overhead of all these employees. And so they did the only thing they could do to survive. They laid people off. And when they laid people off, the profits shot through the roof. And when the profits shoot through the roof, the CEO has a contract that says he gets paid a bonus because of his leadership. And that's why the CEO's got more bonuses than ever before, because unemployment is higher than it's ever been. Don't you get it? They laid us off and made the profit. That's the way it goes. But sooner or later, those inventories are going to dwindle. Sooner or later, the people that actually build the stuff, they're going to have to hire them again. It's a cycle. That's how it works. That's why post-war recessions happen. Profit-taking. Well, now the profits have been taken. The problem is those companies cannot hire back. You know why? Because the banks have squandered all the money. The banks aren't loaning. Traditionally, these companies could go back to the banks and say, okay, we're ready to start another manufacturing line. We need to borrow $500 million. We're going to hire 2,000 people, and we're going to start up our new product line. And the bank says, oops, we're not loaning on that anymore. And the company says, what? What do you mean you're not loaning on that anymore? We've been in business for 100 years. We've never filed bankruptcy. We're debt-free. What do you mean? Sorry. we're not loaning money on that anymore. And it didn't happen once. It happened 1,000 times. It happened 10,000 times. It happened 100,000 times. And that's why the money stopped flowing. Once the money stopped moving through the system, the dominoes began to fall. Because the dollar has to keep moving through the system. Otherwise, the alchemy doesn't work. The mathematical formula doesn't work. You have to get money moving through the system again. And that's what the protesters don't understand. Now these Occupy Wall Streeters are saying, we demand that integrity be restored to our elections. One citizen, $1, one vote. Only citizens should make campaign contributions. Campaign contributions by citizens should not exceed $1 to any political candidate or party. I gotta tell you, if that happens, free enterprise, free elections are over. Because if the people cannot hear the platforms, they never get a chance to vote. These are the same people that argue against the Electoral College. Oh, let's do away with the Electoral College. That's the corrupt thing. Why these big states, blah, 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 and they get all the, you know, electoral and electorate, and blah, 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 Electoral College, got to be done away. Let's go back to the popular vote. The instant you make that decision, you turn this country over to 7 states. That's it. 43 states will never hear a political speech. You'll never see a debate because you're meaningless. You're flyover country. You don't have enough population to be important. Arkansas, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, Alabama. Forget about it. You'll never see another presidential candidate forever because you don't have enough people. Florida, New York, Massachusetts, California, Texas, Ohio, Michigan. These are the states that will see presidential candidates. And once you win those 7 states, you've won the election. The Electoral College is vital. Those 100 Senate seats and those 435 congressional seats, that's what controls the votes. It is spread that way so that we can hear the campaign speeches. We can participate in this republic. This nation is not a democracy. It never was a democracy. It has democratic principles. You do have the right to speak. You have the right to vote. You have the right to own property. You have the right to participate in the republic. But this is a republic. It was founded as a republic, and it will remain a republic as long as it exists. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. We'll take a 5-minute musical break. I'll let the producer play the music for us. And we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back in about 5 minutes. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio. I'm so glad you tuned in and are getting squared. See you in 5 minutes. Right, welcome back to X Squared Radio, Hour 2. By the way, it's October 30th. Tomorrow night is Halloween night. I encourage you to change your look tomorrow. Ghosts, goblins, witches, whatever you want to do, I suggest you go to work looking like something positive, something uplifting, something that will, people next year will say, oh, yeah, I remember what you dressed up like last year. Will you do that big orange thing again? Yeah, I think it's just kind of a cool way to let your hair down and maybe be the real person you want to be. By the way, I do want to open up the phone lines this hour. Our toll-free number anywhere North America, 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471. And if you're anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can reach us at 530-413-4511. And if you have to go out, and I suggest starting your Christmas shopping early this year, because I can tell you right now that most of your stores are not going to carry the inventory that they carried last year. Now, I know you know what that means. It means that if you're a size 6 or a size, 36 waistband, if you don't get out before Thanksgiving, you're going naked next year. Because those clothes are all going to be gone. And yes, there are sales out there. If you go out there, you can get some good stuff. But I suggest going out. And while you're doing that, you should call in to our conference line, which is 760-569-7676. Then dial the passcode 192919#. Now, if you're listening to this in archive, that's fine. Because you can tune in to BBS Radio's archives, at least on Channel 2, anytime by dialing this number. So if you're tired of the talk radio you're getting, punctuated by a plethora of commercials you don't want to hear, news you can't stand listening to anymore, then I suggest just dial up BBS Radio at 760-569-7676, passcode 192919#, and you get to listen to well over 100 of the sharpest hosts on the planet on a network that is clearly the largest and most well-run on the internet. Why is it growing? Because the Newsoms have their love and their heart in this business. And if you think you have what it takes to be a talk radio host, then I suggest you contact me, bagnew@x2-radio.com, and I would be happy to sponsor you into bbsradio.com, and you can give it a shot for yourself. Is it affordable? Yes. You have to build your audience. You got to do some marketing. As I said, you got to see if you have what it takes, but if you want to give it a shot, I'd be happy to give you the chance. You won't get this chance on AM radio. You're not going to listen to some other talk radio on, AM 1110 WBT in Charlotte or, KHJ in California. You're not going to listen to those AM stations and get a shot like this. You want to get a shot? You want to build a name for yourself? You want to see if you have what it takes? Get a hold of me. bagnew@x2-radio.com. We'll see. This is like the X Factor for radio. You want to try it out? I'd be more than happy to give you a shot. You don't even have to be good looking. You can have a face for radio, just like me. Now, in the last hour, we talked a little bit about the Occupy Wall Street crowd that has been occupying public lands and city parks and street corners all around the nation. And as much as city managers detest this and have sent out their uniformed thugs to try to run them off the streets, photograph them, check them against homeland security logs and violate their constitutional right to privacy, I implore you, do not rise to violence. And those people that are being caught pimping 16-year-olds out there, dealing drugs, raping, committing larceny, locate these people and run them off. They don't need to be part of your gig, okay? You want to protest just for protest's sake? Hey, I'm all for it. You got the right to do it. I applaud you for going out there and freezing your tootsies off in a rented tent for your cause. Even if your cause is causeless, you have the right to do it. I really wish you would do it somewhere other than the city park, because I kind of like to go to the city park and meditate from time to time, and, well, you're harsh in my gig. So, get it done, get it over with, come up with a message, and, by the way, people, don't forget to register to vote. Come on. You know, if you're going to win a lottery, you got to buy a ticket. All right? Don't forget to vote. Now, next month, we're sort of starting the 12-month countdown to the election. This is not a political talk radio program, but we do talk about the economic science, the sociology, the study of the social condition. We talk about the mysteries of the universe and of the earth, and certainly, at the top of the list right now is this mysterious economy, this mysterious game where 10 trillionaires have come to a table to play cards, and they've brought their best business ideas, their best cigars, their best scotch. They have sat down at the table with piles and piles of chips, and they have played and played and played, and now nobody can ante up. You see, this is the problem. Somebody at this table should have a big-ass pile of chips, and they don't. All the chips are gone. All the chips are gone. And what they have finally figured out is that the bank has been skimming off every single pot. That's right. And at first we thought, oh, it's just a little bit. 6% here, 7% there. Now we've discovered it's been more like 36%, 66%, 600%. Oh, you think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding. 600% interest. That's what they've been scooping off. And Mr. Weiss and his study, the failure of Bear Stearns, Lehman, you remember Lehman Brothers, Washington Mutual. You remember Washington Mutual, don't you? No? If you work for wages, you better take a look at your retirement fund. There's a 90% chance it's either managed by Washington Mutual, also called Mass Mutual, or Fidelity. Check it out. That's who's been manipulating your money. And also the near failure of Citigroup, which in my opinion should have been a complete failure and dissolution of Citigroup, one of the biggest criminal organizations in the history of economics. Why? Because they've been naked shorting thousands and thousands of small companies into complete obliteration. Absolutely in violation of law. Absolutely in violation of current federal law. But, the SEC chairman lets it go. The SEC chairman won't indict, because the SEC chairman, appointed by Obama, is in on the gig. That's right. The naked shorting and wholesale destruction of tens of thousands of penny stocks, which should be dollar stocks. They should be the drivers behind NASDAQ right now. But no, because Citigroup destroyed them. That's right. It shouldn't have been the near failure of Citigroup. It should have been the dissolution, the expungement of Citigroup, and the demise of Fannie Mae years before it collapsed. Oh, he warned of it. But who didn't? My goodness, I'm a scientist, and I saw that coming. Now, let's talk about another mystery of the Earth, because it seems as though there's a correlation. In this hour, this is going to really blow your mind. First of all, there's a 6.6 quake that's hit Turkey. You all heard about it. Hundreds of people dead, buildings collapsed everywhere. Why? Well, because the buildings aren't built to earthquake standards. And trust me, people, earthquakes are not rare in this area. There are like 2,400 earthquakes a week there. Yes, they're all small, but this is a tectonically active area. Lots of mountains around Turkey. You've ever looked at Turkey? Turkey's huge. It's a big country. And it's under all kinds of tectonic and geological stress. Earthquakes have been happening there since recorded time. So you would think that they would learn a better way of building buildings than stacking blocks one on top of the other with an open ceiling. Sorry, I still have the plague. No, it's not contagious over the microphone, so you're fine. And you probably have some empathy with me because while you're listening to this, you're fighting back a cough of your own. It's one of those things that comes on, beats you up for about 24 hours. It's a great weight loss program, by the way. But then it's that pesky cough that hangs around and interrupts your conversation for the next 3 weeks. That's the hardest thing to get rid of. Anyway, emergency teams are trying to rescue people. And there have been miracles, babies found after days, still alive. And lots of things are going well for that country right now as aid pours into the area. But the thing is that this is not rare. This is occurring around the planet. And we've had other very strange anomalies. For instance, the weather that has plagued us for the last 6 or 7 years. As I brought to you in 2009, if you want to go back and listen to those broadcasts, I remember them. I predicted that the winter of 2010 would be one of record snowfall. Nobody was thinking about this, right? Global warming, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we're all getting hotter. It wasn't happening. The temperatures leveled out around 1998, and the average temperature of the Earth hasn't really changed much. Not up, not down. But the strange thing is that we've had some indicators, like all the major glaciers in the world. Unbeknownst to the global warming crowd, because they never really mentioned this, they kept thinking that the glaciers were shrinking. All the major glaciers are growing. Oh, and they weren't growing just a little bit, several meters a year, they were growing. This is a sign, not of global cooling. That's what they couldn't buy into. No, it's not global cooling. It's climate change. Climate change. In 2009, I predicted right here on this program that the winter of 2010 would be a record snowfall and that it would fill the passes of the Rocky Mountains and the Wasatch Front to the point that they would not melt in the summer. In fact, I predicted that the summer of 2010 and the summer of 2011 would never happen. That areas like Boise, and you'll remember me talking about the eastern coast of Oregon there, right? Yeah. And those areas around the Wasatch Front would never experience a summer. They would hover around 70 degrees all summer long, and that's what they did for 2 years in a row, 2010 and 2011. Now, in the Wasatch Front, there's an area called Alta, Snowbird. Many of you have skied there. If you haven't, you should. My good friend Dan Bass owns it. They had 15 feet of hard-packed snow. They had a 500% snowpack for the winter of 2010. I predicted then that it would not melt. That and when the winter happened in 2011, it would snow on top of the snow from 2010. And that's exactly what happened. And now we have a glacier that's growing in the Wasatch Front. We have a glacier that's growing in the Rocky Mountains. We have not had glaciers in those areas in recorded time. We could see the effects from it from hundreds of thousands of years ago. But we haven't had glaciers in those areas. Now we do. And now the glaciers all over the planet are growing. Well, how can that be? How can that be? We haven't dropped in temperature in the Earth. That's true, we haven't. In fact, this last summer, Texas was on fire. And I told you already on this program, it will burn for 20 years. But it will also have an early winter. Oh, yeah, they laughed at me in July. They laughed at me in July when it was 100 degrees in Wisconsin. And I'm telling you, Wisconsinites aren't used to that. These are people that go north in the summertime. Yeah, north in the summertime for their vacation. They don't like the heat. They don't like the heat. I said, you guys are going to have an early winter. Hush your mouth. No, I'm serious. You're going to have an early winter. And it snowed in Minneapolis. And it snowed in Washington, D.C. And it snowed in New York. And it snowed in Bangor, Maine. And we're going to talk about this hour. Why are the summers so harsh and the winters so harsh? Why is the weather flipping back and forth, back and forth? We cannot get ready for anything. Our gas... Our gas consumption is going up in the winter, and our electricity consumption is going up in the summer because we're trying to stay cool and we're just trying to stay warm, and we're fighting it back and forth both ways. What's going on? I can tell you, climate change is upon us. Back in the summer when Texas was on fire and heat records were being set every day for more than 3 months, we told you right here on X Squared Radio that climate change was upon us. People wrote me and said global warming was real. I said, no, it is not real. Climate change is upon us. The winters will be colder and more fierce, and the summers will be hotter and more intense. As we predicted, winter started early and powerfully. A historic October snowstorm is still crushing New England with heavy snow and howling winds before cruising away into Atlantic Canada. Snow amounts have already topped 2 feet across portions of New England, while record-shattering snow hammered the major northeast cities from Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia to New York City and Hartford, Connecticut. An additional 3 to 6 inches of snow will thump across portions of Maine and New Brunswick, Canada, as the potent nor'easter races along. Heavy snow rates of 1 to 2 inches an hour will be found in this zone, with thunder snow a possibility. Do you know what thunder snow is? It's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. Hang on a second, gotta write a Skyper back. This, when you get thunder snow, it means it's snowing heavily and there's lightning in it. Yeah, I was in one once in Denver, Colorado. I think it was in 1974, the winter of 1974. Most amazing thing. Most amazing thing to see lightning and hear thunder in a snowstorm. Very cool stuff. Now, here's the cool thing. The last time there was snow this early, this heavy, was during the Civil War. There are a lot of similarities between now and the Civil War. And I'm telling you, Earth is tuned in to what's going on socially on our planet. By the way, I just want to throw this in parenthetically. Ron Paul won another set of straw polls in Iowa. He's won 2 separate tallies for the National Federation of Republican Assemblies presidential straw poll. Paul won both the Iowa voters only count at the Saturday convention in Des Moines, as well as the tally of non-Iowans who participated. In the Iowa voters result, Paul took, are you ready? In the Iowa voters result, Paul took 82%. Following him were Herman Cain with 14.7%, Rick Santorum with 1%, Newt Gingrich with 0.9%, Michelle Bachmann, an Iowan, with 0.5%, Rick Perry with 0.5%, Gary Johnson, 0.2%, Mitt Romney, and John Huntsman, 0%. 0%. The tally of non-Iowans who voted, Ron Paul won 26%, followed by Kane 25%. Perry and Santorum tied at 16%. Gingrich 11, Bachman 6, Romney at 1, and Huntsman and Johnson 0. You don't think Ron Paul has a chance of winning? Oh, you can snicker all you want. You can turn your heads. You can listen to the press and believe that Paul is a non-issue. But when you go out there and you look at the elections, you go online and you look at who's raising money. You look at whose message is solid and has not changed for 10 years. There's only one candidate, and that's Ron Paul. Solid, solid congressman with a solid, verifiable, validatable voting record. He knows more about foreign policy than anyone save Newt Gingrich. No, he isn't all slick. No, he doesn't have the best hair. Yes, he looks a little bit like, you know, a silly old man with big ears. And are you ready to vote for another Hollywood-type presidential candidate? Do you really think that somebody that can read off those teleprompters as slick as the guy we have in office right now, do you think really that's where we need to be led? Or do you think we need somebody who has the only $1 trillion plan for fixing this country? The only one who realizes that the alphabet soup of bureaucracies is what has made up our government and what has brought us down. What does this have to do with the weather? This is a very good question. Because the weather is very similar to that that occurred during the Civil War. By the way, the time before that that it occurred, you got it, during the Revolutionary War. Now here's something interesting, very, very interesting. It's kind of strange how history repeats itself. It's strange how the theme, the voice, the passion that builds a country, that makes something happen, that makes the universe shift, that changes the mean consciousness, the average consciousness of a planet. How these things cycle. How these things sound. I'm going to read you something that was written in 1765. Liberty is the greatest blessing that man can enjoy. And slavery, the greatest curse that human nature is capable of. And by the way, that slavery can be in several forms. In 1765, it was the curse of one man owning another. In our day, it is the slavery of debt. It is the slavery of servitude. It is the slavery of going to a job every day because you have to. And you have to listen to the tirade of a boss. You have to put up with his sexual harassment. You have to put up with his attitude. You have to put up with his insults and his running down of your integrity and your sovereignty, beating you down to where the only solution, the only salvation you have is to come groveling at his feet and do what he tells you to do. Yeah. That kind of slavery. Yeah, that's what I thought. You're familiar with it. Okay. Hence, it is a matter of the utmost importance to men which of the two shall be their portion. Absolute liberty is perhaps incompatible with any kind of government. You don't believe me? Go ask the Wall Street occupiers. The safety resulting from society and the advantages of just and equal laws hath caused men to forego some part of their natural liberty and submit to government. Shall we call it a republic? Yes, we do give up some of our liberty so that we can function as a society, so that we can divide up the labors of operating a city, a town, a state, among those who specialize in running those things. In other words, you have a health department, you have a department that manages the septic tanks of a community. You have someone that picks up the trash, someone that manages the electricity, make sure you have clean water, make sure you have safe streets by taking care of the 2 or 3% of society that refuses to obey any law. Those kinds of things, yes. We do give up that little bit of liberty so that we can have some measure of safety. It's a balance. This appears to be the most rational account of its beginning, although, it must be confessed, mankind have by no means been agreed about it. Some have found its origin in the divine appointment. Others have thought it took its rise from power. Enthusiasts have dreamed about that dominion was founded in grace, leaving these points to be settled by the descendants of Filmer, Cromwell, Venner. We shall consider the federal constitution as it at present stands on revolution principles, and from thence endeavor to find the measure of its of the magistrate's power and the people's obedience. Now, keep in mind, this isn't 1776. This is 1765, 11 years before the Declaration. These are the feelings that were being passed about in a series of pamphlets that the people, the colonists, the states, were reading. This is what built up for 11 years to the final conflict. This glorious Constitution, the best that ever existed among men, will be confessed by all to be founded on compact. That means we all swore to it. That means we all signed it. And established by consent of the people. By this most beneficent compact, federal subjects are to be governed only agreeably to laws to which themselves have in some way consented, and are not to be compelled to part with their property, but as it is called for by the authority of such laws. In other words, and I've changed a few words here, I've changed the word British into federal, and I've changed the word colonies into states. That's it. Just so you can understand where this fits in today's struggle. Okay? The former is true liberty, the latter is to be really possessed of property and have something that may be called one's own. In other words, the federal government can't come in and foreclose on your home and give it to somebody else. The federal government can't come in and take that which you have earned and distribute it to someone who has not earned it. The federal government cannot come in and take something that you have sweated for, built, designed, stayed up late at night, given your life to, and take it from you and give it to someone to whom it does not belong, or just take it for themselves. 1765. On the contrary, those who are governed at the will of another or others, and whose property may be taken from them by taxes or otherwise, without their own consent or against their will, are in a miserable condition of slavery. For, says Algernon Sidney in his Discourse on Government, liberty solely consists in the independency of the will of another. And by name of slave, we understand a man who can neither dispose of his person or goods, and enjoys all at the will of his master. Yeah. These things premised, whether the federal American states on this continent are just entitled to like privileges and freedoms as their fellow subjects in the federal government are, it is a joint, worthy, mature examination. In discussing this question, we shall make the states with whose rights we are best acquainted the rule of our reasoning, not in the least doubting all the others are justly entitled to like rights with them. Quite interesting stuff. Just a few changes of words. States for colonies. Federal government for Britain. Kind of fits, doesn't it? Well, there is not anything new or extraordinary in these rights granted to the federal states. The states from all countries at all times have enjoyed equal freedom with the mother state. Indeed, there would be found very few people in the world willing to leave their native country and go through the fatigue and hardship of planting in a new, uncultivated one for the sake of losing their freedom. They who settle in new countries must be poor, and surely immigrants are, and in course ought to be free. Advantages, pecuniary and agreeable, are not on the side of the immigrant, and surely they must have something in their stead. To illustrate this, permit us to examine what hath generally been the condition of the states with respect to their freedom. We will begin with those who went out from the ancient Commonwealth of Greece, which are the first, perhaps, we have any good account of. Thucydides, that grave and judicious historian says of them, they were not sent out to be slaves, but to be the equals of those who remained behind. And again, the Corinthians gave public notice that the new state was going to Epitomus, into which all that should enter should have equal and like privileges with those who stayed at home. This was universally the condition of the Grecian states. They went out and settled new countries. They took such forms of government as themselves chose, though it generally nearly resembled that of the mother state. And certainly we resemble the government of England. Yes, we have a Congress and we have a Senate, just as England has a House of Commons and a House of Lords. That's the way it was originally set up. That's the way it works. 'Tis true, they were fond to acknowledge their original and always confess themselves under obligation to pay a kind of honorary respect to and show a filial dependence upon the Commonwealth from which they sprung. We still have Commonwealths in this country. One of the original states of the original colonies of the United States, Kentucky, still calls itself a commonwealth, and there are others. So, if we pass from the Grecian to the Roman states, we shall find them not less free, but this difference may be observed between them, that the Roman states did not, like the Grecian, become separate states governed by different laws, but always remained a part of the mother state. All that were free of the states were always free of Rome. And Grotius gives us an opinion of the Roman king concerning freedom of the states. King Tullius says, "For our part, we look upon it neither truth nor justice that the mother cities ought of necessity to rule over their states," which basically means the federal government is going to rule over the states. The states are not going to be able to govern themselves. No, not their education, not their systems of commerce, not their trade. Everything will be governed by the federal government. And thus, what has happened over the last dozen years or so is that several states, actually over 32 of them, have now signed sovereignty acts. Now, I don't know if you remember what the importance of a sovereignty act is, but let me share it with you just for a second. Before the Civil War, several states had passed for themselves what are called nullification acts. And this basically says that the federal government can go ahead and pass a law, any law that it wants to, but the state will not consider it enforceable until the state legislature ratifies that federal law. In other words, the federal law was nullified until the state legislature passed that law. Well, that is one of the things the federal government stood hard against. It was one of the things that had to go away at the end of the Civil War. And every single state after the Civil War was over, the war between the states, you know, the war between the North and the South, or as they might say in the South, the recent unpleasantness. After that, the states were required to sign a Reconstruction Act, which meant that their right to secede, their right to nullify federal law and only enforce it if the state legislature passes it, was forfeited. And every state signed it. Well, every state except one, Texas. That's right. Texas never signed. Texas never signed. And so state by state, now 32, we need 36, I think maybe 37 in order to accomplish what I'm about to talk about, have now passed sovereignty acts. This means that the states operate independently of the federal government. Not quite nullification, not quite that bold, but some of the federal regulations are being set aside, state by state, and the states are deciding not to enforce those federal laws. And it has been reciprocated, because Alabama, for instance, has passed laws that the federal government refuses to enforce. And so the states are having to take care of themselves. Arizona, Texas, Alabama, Louisiana, they have huge illegal immigrant problems. And so they're having to enforce the laws on their own. And, of course, as you might imagine, each state does it a little differently, depending on the legislature, depending on their purposes for doing so. And the federal legislative and executive powers have considered the states as possessed of these rights and have always, heretofore, in the most tender and parental manner, treated them as their dependent, although free, condition required. That is, until now. The protection promised on the part of the crown, that is, the presidency, which the cheerfulness and gratitude we acknowledge, hath at all times been given to the states. The dependence of the states to the federal government hath been fully testified by consent and ready obedience to all the commands of the president, and royal predecessors, both men and money, have been raised in them at all times when called for, in other words, the National Guard, and even federal troops when necessary, with as much alacrity and as large proportion as hath been done in Great Britain and in other parts of the world, the ability of each considered. It must be confessed with thankfulness that the first adventurers and their successors, for over 130 years, have fully enjoyed all the freedom and immunities promised on the removal from England. But here the scene seems to be unhappily changing. The federal ministry, whether induced by jealousy of the states, by false information, or by some alteration in the system of political motive, this we are sure of, the Congress passed an act limiting, restricting, and burdening the trade of these states much more than had ever been done before, and also for greatly enlarging the power and jurisdiction of the courts of the federal government in the states, and likewise passed another act establishing certain tax duties. These acts have occasioned great uneasiness among the federal subjects on the continent of America. How much reason there is for it, we will endeavor, in the most modest and plain manner we can, to lay before the public. Let me break that down in plain and simple language. As the needs of the nation have outgrown the needs of the states, mostly, I would say, for safety, not for liberty, certain organizations have been put in place which transcend the rights of the states. That is to say, they cross over state borders and they take license with the liberty of the citizens of those states. Let me be a little more clear. Let's take an organization called the Transportation Safety Administration. Also a division called the Department of Homeland Security. Now, although these are rather innocuous names, the charter under which they operate and the license that they take with your freedom and liberties is far from benign. Let me tell you, the TSA, the Transportation Safety Administration, is now conducting multidisciplinary, multidepartmental using local police, state police, National Guard, FBI, and National Security Administration. Yeah, NSA. They're using satellites. And NRO. And also, this is with full congressional approval. It's mostly being operated by the Department of Justice. Oh, yeah, that Department of Justice that brought you successful programs like Fast and Furious. You remember that one, where they take state-of-the-art weapons, distribute them among bad guys, and then wonder why in the world our guys are getting shot with our own weapons? Houses down in Juarez being busted with hundreds. Oh, you thought it was just a few dozen weapons. Wrong. We're talking about tractor trailer loads of state-of-the-art weapons. And unbelievably, I know you're going to find this just unbelievable, none of those weapons had GPS chips in them. Yeah, imagine that. We can't track a single one of those things. Not a Tech 9, not an Uzi, not an AK-47, nothing. Can't track a one of them. Oh, they could put GPS chips in a cell phone. They could put GPS chips on a credit card or a shipping container. But you can't put one in the butt of a gun you're going to give to the bad guys? And how about this? How about not just a GPS chip, but maybe a self-destructing fire pin? Or, better yet, a remote-controlled charge in the butt of the gun? So that if it's ever aimed at one of our guys, we could just, you know, hit a cell phone app and the gun explodes in their hands. Come on, people. We're not talking about high-tech stuff here. This is stuff that can be done by any high school chemist. It can be done, but it wasn't. Why not? Are you telling me that the TSA, Homeland Security, NSA, National Guard, Department of Justice, are you telling me that they're staffed, managed, and run by such buffoons that they can't figure this out? Are you telling me there was not one brainstorming session where somebody said, Mr. Holton, what happens, you know, like once these guns get over the border and they manage to load them, what happens if they're like aimed at our guys? What happened if they kill law enforcement in Mexico? Isn't there a little bit of international liability here if we're like issuing machine guns to bad guys in another country and those bad guys are killing cops in that country? Hasn't anybody thought about that? Like, isn't there a way we can trace these guns other than the serial number? Like, they're going to go register them, you dumb idiot. No. There's no way to track them. No. There's no way to decommission that gun remotely. No. There's no way to blow the gun up. No. There's no isotropic signature that we can track from space. Nothing. What the heck is going on? And they're setting up roadblocks, state after state, to check who? You, the resident of a state. And if you haven't been pulled over by this latest system, trust me, it works. Even when you're out in the middle of nowhere, you can't see a cop for 20 miles. Don't you dare drive 20 miles over the speed limit. You're not being tracked by air anymore. Uh-uh. You're being tracked by camera. That's right. They take a picture right down the front of your windshield and then your license plate. And then they run your tag to see if there's any wants and warrants against you. And if there aren't, they come out and they write you a speeding ticket. No, they weren't there. No, they didn't actually witness you speeding. No, you don't really get to face your accuser. You are arrested, you are tried, and you are convicted right there over the door sill of your own vehicle by camera. That's right. And it happens every minute of every day in every state. And it's getting worse. Your liberties are gone. Oh, you're safe. You're safe. Because if you're a terrorist and you've registered your car and they track you, and they realize that you are someone they're trying to find, they're looking for you anyway. That's right. And by the way, if you don't think those cameras are there, you're just fooling yourself. Just look to the right side of the freeway next time you drive down. You'll see a pole sitting there all by itself. It's got a little tower under it. It's got a metal cabinet that has the radio inside of it. It's got a little Zigbee board in it that broadcasts the signal. And at the top of that pole, you'll see a little black dome. And that little black dome has a high-definition camera in it. And it's watching you. Every so often, every quarter mile, in some areas every eighth of a mile, and if you come to an intersection that's got four roads coming in, you may see 8 or 10 of those cameras. Now, they're not watching for people running red lights. Don't fool yourselves. They're not watching for traffic. They're looking at you. They're reading your license. They're looking at your face. They're seeing who you have in the car with you. They're seeing what cargo is in the back of your pickup truck. And they're tracking for more than just that. They're looking at infrared signatures. They're looking for chemical signatures. You're hauling around fertilizer? Trust me, you're going to get pulled over and checked. So, all that was foreseen by the founders. All that. One thing at a time, taking away the liberties of the people in exchange for safety until you have neither. And before too long, it won't be a federal trooper that pulls you over. It'll be a drone. It's already happening. In other countries, we're already watching the streets with cameras here and there, cameras in space. We're tracking people. We know what building they leave. We know what building they go to. We have drones parked everywhere, run by little fat chicks that sit. I didn't mean that. Run by young people who are sitting in a chair in Nevada with a joystick in their hands and a headset. And they can fly that drone right down your exhaust pipe if they want to. So we are giving it up, step by step, yard by yard, liberty by liberty. And it's happening, it's funded, it's happening right around us, and maybe, just maybe, the earth itself is reacting again, just the way it did before the last time we fought this out. The last time the federal government overstepped its bounds with the states and took a little bit too much. A little bit too much. 13 states decided to step out. And they were beat into submission in the bloodiest war this nation has ever realized. We don't want to see that again. We don't think it can happen again in this country. And as hundreds of thousands of people sit on sidewalks, street corners, and city parks around our country, maybe they're trying to say the same thing in a peaceful way. I hope they don't get hijacked by somebody who has another design. Once they cross the line, all those camps you can see seeing set up around the country, they're going to get used. They're going to get used. It's not going to be a pretty sight. Well, that poker game I was telling you about, it is alive and well, and the banks have definitely been skimming. You know, the world's leaders are notorious for skimming wealth from their countries. The world was aghast when Egypt's president was ousted and they discovered he had skimmed some $87 billion off U.S. subsidies that had been given to that country for humanitarian aid. Instead of establishing clean drinking water, housing, and some basic health care, he secured a plush spot at a global resort for the ultra-wealthy. Muammar Gaddafi secretly salted away more than $200 billion in bank accounts real estate and corporate investments around the world before he was killed, according to senior Libyan officials. $200 billion. It's a small country. That's about $30,000 for every Libyan citizen and double the amount that Western governments previously had suspected. The new estimates of the deposed dictator's hidden cash, gold reserves, and investments are staggering. One person who has studied detailed records of the asset search said Friday, "No one truly appreciated the scope of it." If the values prove accurate, Gaddafi will go down in history as one of the most rapacious as well as one of the most bizarre world leaders, on a scale with the late Mobutu Sese Seko in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or the late Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines. Revelation of the stunning size of the portfolio may stir anger among Libyans, about one-third of whom live in abject poverty. And it is likely to spur an effort to return the money to Libya's transitional government, which says it wants to embark on an ambitious plan to modernize the country after nearly 42 years of rule by Gaddafi's whim. During his 42 years in power, Gaddafi steered aid and investments to benefit his own family and tribe, but he denied support for much of the country, especially the eastern region that historically resisted his family's despotic grip on power. Gaddafi's death after he was captured by revolutionary fighters Thursday outside his birthplace, the coastal town of Sirte, not only ended the armed uprising that erupted last February, it also set the stage for other governments to begin repatriating a bonanza in sequestered assets to the oil-rich but cash-poor nation. You're going to see that change. Obama administration officials were stunned last spring when they found $37 billion in Libyan regime accounts and investments in the United States, and they quickly froze the assets before Gaddafi or his aides could move them. Governments in France, Italy, England, Germany seized control of another $30 billion or so. Investigators estimated that Gaddafi had stashed perhaps another $30 billion elsewhere in the world for a total of about $100 billion. But subsequent investigations by American, European, and Libyan authorities determined that Gaddafi secretly sent tens of billions more abroad over the years and made sometimes lucrative investments in nearly every major country, including much of the Middle East and Southeast Asia. Most of the money was under the name of government institutions such as the Central Bank of Libya, the Libyan Investment Authority, the Libyan Foreign Bank, the Libyan National Oil Corp, and the Libya Africa Investment Portfolio. But investigators said Gaddafi and his family members could have access to any of the money if they chose to. Libya has the largest proven oil reserves in Africa. And by the way, that Libyan oil is the nicest oil in the world. It could almost be used for fuel just the way it is. So that will give you an idea. By the way, also, just here at the top of the hour, I want to put this in. You heard Vice President Biden talk about his statement that crime was up, murders were up, rape was up, and it was going to continue to go up unless the president's plan was passed. I decided to look it up for myself. You probably already know this, but I decided to look it up for myself. And the latest FBI crime statistics show the national crime rate is falling. Violent crime in the United States dropped 6.5% last year. Experts say they can attribute the decrease to a number of factors, including an aging population, stronger community policing efforts, and more programs targeted both at risk teens and prison parolees. The FBI admits that crimes are committed by the same people repeatedly. There's a very small influx of first-time offenders into the system. It can usually track them through a lifetime of increasingly more violent crimes until they become a federal matter. Once incarcerated, the crime rate is going to drop. Keeping chronic criminals in jail produces the greatest reduction in crime. Long story short, Biden lied. Didn't tell the truth. Violent crime, rape, murder, down. Oh, only in two counties, in one state. Yes. Two counties in one state showed increases in property and violent crime. Not where you think. Nope. Wasn't D.C. Nope. Wasn't L.A. It was in Weber and Davis counties in Utah. Go figure. Let's take a 5-minute break. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. We're glad you're here to join us. We're coming to you live from an undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains. Dropped to about 32 degrees last night, but it was actually a pleasant day, up around 58 degrees. Our AccuWindow forecast sunny. There might be a few meteorites tonight, and over the next couple of weeks, you might want to go out and take a look at it. And don't be surprised if you see an aurora out there. Could be red or green. We have some pretty excellent geomagnetic storms in the sense that they're not really disruptive, but they're kind of visually beautiful. And as we blow into winter, and our hearts go out to those people who don't have power tonight, mostly because they don't get to listen to X Squared Radio live tonight. They have to listen to the archive. Hopefully they get the branches off of the power lines. And we experience that pretty much every year down here in North Carolina because Interstate 40 goes right through the middle of the state. North of I-40 it snows, south of I-40 it rains. But right along I-40 we get what's called the ice line, which means it just kind of coats everything with ice until it gets so heavy it snaps in two. And that's where our power lines go down. We've had some just, you know, super exciting news going on in the last couple of weeks. And anytime that there's conflict between government and the populace that is governed, it always gets interesting. And fortunately, and unfortunately, sometimes it gets violent. Those of you that have been watching some of the news where you've seen police pepper spraying people that are sitting on the sidewalk. One such video, this girl just screaming her lungs out, sitting there minding her own business, singing Kumbaya on the sidewalk, not hurting anybody, and the cop just steps up to her and sprays her in the face with pepper spray. There's just no call to this. Well, recently, and you may have seen some of this in the news, but I'm going to play for you an interview that you may not have heard on the news. United States Marine Corps Sergeant Shamar Thomas from Roosevelt, New York, went toe-to-toe with New York's finest, an activist in the Occupy Wall Street movement, sort of. Thomas voiced his opinions of the NYPD police brutality that had and has been plaguing the what are called the Cross OWs movement. And this is Thomas is a 24-year-old Marine veteran, two tours in Iraq. He currently plays amateur football and is in college. Thomas comes from a long line of people who sacrificed for their country. Mother, Army veteran, Iraq, stepfather, Army, active duty, Afghanistan, grandfather, Air Force veteran, Vietnam, great-grandfather, Navy veteran, World War II. This is a long tradition of fighting for the freedoms of this country. Sometimes the right person with the right words and motivation can make a difference. Now, you have probably seen the video of him out there telling these cops off and really beating them up. I don't know if you're going to be able to hear this or not, actually, because it's going to be on my computer. So I'm probably not going to play it for you. I don't think it's going to come through because it's not going to go back through the board. And you're hearing me through my laptop microphone, so you're not going to hear this, which is kind of, I just realized, a technical difficulty. But he had... basically, he's looks to be about 265 pounds, about 6'5", and he stands in front of these cops and yells at them and tells them to leave the people alone. And although they keep moving in on him, they don't take any action against him. It's probably a good thing they didn't, because it would have got violent, it would have got messy. But it was all being filmed, and that's what kind of got people going. Now, this conflict, make no mistake about it, this is not between the middle class and the fat cats on Wall Street. This is just protest for protest's sake. And I'm not going to criticize it beyond that. I am just going to say that they don't represent middle class. They don't represent anything organized other than protest for protest's sake. Now, sooner or later, sometime this winter, it's going to all die off and go away. In the spring, they may come back with a vengeance, and in the summer, you know, it's going to make the Million Man March look like a walk in the park, because it's really going to be disruptive. Somewhere in that mix, some charismatic is going to rise up and is going to become the spokesperson for this group. Of course, like most ragtag organizations like this, they eat their own young. So they're not going to support anybody who tries to take over, who tries to take leadership, because this is a classic case of too many chiefs and not enough Indians. Everybody wants to be a chief. Everybody's looking for camera time here. And that's what it boils down to. Now, fortunately, there is one leader who is out there telling the truth. There is one man who is elected, he is in office, he is serving right now, but he's also running for president, he is saying these things. And if you didn't watch the last debate, you missed something, because it was really, really good. And I was so impressed by it, by the text of it, I decided to go and look up the words that Ron Paul said while he was in the debate. And I'm going to read those words for you tonight, because I know you missed them. Why do I know this? Because I know the press didn't play it for you, because they don't want you to hear these words. Here's what he said. I do want to make a point that spending, you know, the spending I'm talking about, this is the spending Congress believes they have an unending perpetual checkbook. It's constantly filled up every microsecond of every day by the money they take out of your paycheck. Do they take it out of the richest paycheck? No. Did they take it out of the poorest paycheck? No, never did. They take it out of the middle class's paycheck. You're the ones paying the taxes. All right? He says, I do want to make a point that spending is a tax. That's right. As soon as the government spends money, eventually it's a tax. Sometimes we put a direct tax on the people. Sometimes we borrow the money. And sometimes we print the money. And then when prices go up, like today, the wholesale price index went up 7%. And if you look at the free market, prices are going up 9 and 10%. So that is a tax. He's right. So spending is the tax. That is the reason I offered the program to cut $1 trillion out of the first year budget that I offer. Well, I would like to explain that rights don't come in bunches. Rights come as individuals. They come from a God. And they come as each individual has a right to life and liberty. And he goes on to say, but I might add about the border control and the Latino vote is we lack resources there. I think we should have more border guards on it, a more orderly transition, and run it better. But where are our resources? You know, we worry more about the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. We need to bring the guard units home and the units back here so we can have more personnel on our border. Yes, yes, I oppose this. We've had votes in the Congress. There was a time when I voted with two other individuals, the two congressmen from Nevada, and I approach it from a state's rights position. What right does 49 states have to punish one state and say, we're going to put our garbage in your state? I think that's wrong. That's when he was talking about nuclear waste dumps. He goes on to say, but I think it's very serious. I think it's very serious. But quite frankly, the government shouldn't be on the business, shouldn't be in the business of subsidizing any form of energy. And nuclear energy, I think, is a good source of energy, but they still get subsidies. Then they assume this responsibility. Then we as politicians and the bureaucrats get involved in this. And when we get involved with which states going to get stuck with the garbage? Which states going to get stuck with the garbage? So I would say the more the free market handles this And the more you deal with property rights and no subsidies to any form of energy, the easier this problem would be solved. Let's see, he goes on to say, but we also have to point, I'd go to Washington as well as Wall Street, but I'd go over to the Federal Reserve. They create the financial bubbles. And you have to understand that you can't solve these problems if you don't know where these bubbles are coming from. But then, when the bailout came, and supported by both parties, you have to realize, oh wait, Republicans were still in charge. So the bailouts came from both parties. Guess who they bailed out? The big corporations, the people who were ripping off the people in the derivatives market. And they said, oh, the world's going to come to an end because we bail out all the banks. So the banks were involved and the Federal Reserve was involved. But who got stuck? The middle class got stuck. They got stuck. They lost their jobs and they lost their houses. If you had to give money out, you should have given it to the people who were losing their mortgages, not the banks. And that got a round of applause like you wouldn't believe. So you shouldn't put that much trust in the government. You have to trust the marketplace. And when the government gets involved, they have to deal with fraud. And how many people have gone to jail, either in the government, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, that participated in this? And nobody suffers the consequences. All these investigations, and yet the people who lose their jobs and lose their houses, it's their fault, according. That's why they're on Wall Street. That's why we can't blame them. We have to blame the business cycle and the economic policies that led to this disaster. Then he goes on to talk. Do you think that a 15% cut in the military would hurt it? I think it would be enhanced. I don't want to cut any defense, and you have to get it straight. There's a lot of money spent in the military budget that doesn't do any good for our defense. And how does it help us to keep troops in Korea all these years? We're broke. We have to borrow this money. Why are we in Japan? Why do we subsidize Germany? And they subsidize their socialized system over there because we pay for it. We're broke. And this whole thing, that this can't be done on the table. I'll tell you what, this debt bubble is the thing you really worry about because it's imploding on us right now. It's worldwide. Anyway, went on to say a lot of great things, and I thought that they were worthwhile to listen to, and that's why I liked the debate. And it led me into this one article, which I call it, Where Did All the Gold Go? A new report prepared for the Prime Minister Putin by the Federal Security Service says that former International Monetary Fund chief Dominique Strauss-Kahn was in charge and jailed in the U.S. for sex crimes on May 14th after his discovery that all the gold held in the United States Bullion Depository, located in Fort Knox, was missing and or unaccounted for. According to this FSB secret report, Strauss-Kahn had become increasingly concerned earlier this month after the United States began stalling its pledged delivery to the IMF of 191.3 tons of gold, agreed to under the Second Amendment of the Articles of Agreement signed by the Executive Board in April 1978, that were to be sold to fund what are called special drawing rights, SDRs, as an alternative to what are called reserve currencies. The FSB report further states that upon Strauss-Kahn raising his concerns, hang on a second, I paged down just a little too far, with American government officials close to President Obama, he was contacted by rogue elements within the Central Intelligence Agency, yes, the CIA, who provided him firm evidence that all the gold reported to be held by the U.S. was gone. Upon Strauss-Kahn receiving the CIA evidence, this report continues, he made immediate arrangements to leave the U.S. for Paris. but when contacted by agents working for France's General Directorate for External Security that American authorities were seeking his capture, he fled to New York City's JFK Airport following these agents' directive not to take his cell phone because U.S. police could track his exact location. Ah! Once Strauss-Kahn was safely boarded on an Air France flight to Paris, however, this FSB report says he made a fatal mistake by calling the hotel from a phone on the plane and asking them to forward his cell phone he had been told to leave behind to his French residence, after which U.S. agents were able to track and apprehend him. Within the past fortnight, this report continues, Strauss-Kahn reached out to his close friend and top Egyptian banker, Mohamed Abdel Salam Omar, to retrieve from the U.S. the evidence given to him by the CIA. Omar, however, had exactly like Strauss-Kahn before him, was charged yesterday by the U.S. with a sex crime against a luxury hotel maid, a charge the FSB labels as beyond belief due to Omar being 74 years old and a devout Muslim. In an astounding move, puzzling many in Moscow, Putin, after reading this secret FSB report today, ordered posted to the Kremlin's official website a defense of Strauss-Kahn, becoming the first world leader to state that the former IMF chief was a victim of a U.S. conspiracy. Putin further stated, "It's hard for me to evaluate the hidden political motives, but I cannot believe that it looks the way it was initially introduced. It doesn't sit right in my head." Interesting to note about all these events is that one of the United States' top congressmen and 2012 presidential candidate, Ron Paul, has long stated his belief that the U.S. government has lied about its gold reserves held at Fort Knox. So concerned has Congressman Paul become about the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve hiding the truth about America's gold reserve, he put forward a bill in late 2010 to force an audit of them, but which was subsequently defeated by Obama regime forces. When directly asked by reporters if he believed there was no gold in Fort Knox or in the Federal Reserve, Congressman Paul gave the incredible reply, "I think it's a possibility." Also interesting to note is that barely 3 days after the arrest of Strauss-Kahn, Congressman Paul made a new call for the U.S. to sell its gold reserves by stating, "Given the high price it is now, and the tremendous debt problem we now have, by all means, sell all at peak." Bizarre reports emanating from the U.S. for years, however, suggest there's no gold to sell. And as we can read, it's posted in 2009. In October of 2009, the Chinese received a shipment of gold bars. You're going to love this. You're going to love this. This is not conspiracy, this is fact. In October of 2009, the Chinese received a shipment of gold bars. Gold is regularly exchanged between countries to pay debts and to settle the so-called balance of trade. Most gold is exchanged and stored in vaults under the suspension of a special organization, supervision of a special organization based in London, the London Bullion Market Association. When the shipment was received, the Chinese government asked that special tests be performed to guarantee the purity and weight of the gold bars. In this test, 4 small holes are drilled into the gold bars, and the metal is then analyzed. Officials were shocked to learn that the bars were fake. They contained cores of tungsten, with only an outer coating of real gold. What's more, these gold bars containing serial numbers for tracking originated in the U.S. and had been stored in Fort Knox for years. they were reportedly between 5,600 and 5,700 bars weighing 400 ounces each in the shipment. To the final state of Strauss-Kahn, it is not in our knowing. But the new report coming from the United States shows his determination not to go down without a fight, as he has hired what is described as a crack team of former CIA spies, special investigators, and media advisors to defend him. To the practical effects on the global economy, should it be proved that the U.S. indeed has been lying about its gold reserves? Russia's central bank yesterday ordered the interest rate raised from 0.25% to 3.5%, and Putin ordered the export ban on wheat and grain crops lifted on July 1st in a move designed to fill the motherland's coffers with money that normally would have flowed to the U.S. The American people's ability to know the truth of these things, and as always, has been shouted out by their propaganda media organs, leaving them in danger of not being prepared for the horrific economic collapse of their nation, now believed will be much sooner than later. There is a table, which I have. It shows that in 1949, the U.S. possessed 702 million troy ounces of gold. 702 million troy ounces of gold. Now, in 1999, apparently, that reserve has dropped to only 261 million ounces of gold. It also reports Germany, France, Japan, China. It reports their gold reserves. If you add up all of these gold reserves, including the United States, there's still over 300 million ounces of gold missing. Now, I'm not saying that the United States had all the gold in the world and they distributed it to these other countries. I can assure you that Germany, France, China, Japan has their own gold reserves. They have their own sources. So with the United States only having 261 million ounces, and by the way, this is just a reported number, not an audited number. That was in 1999. That means that there's somewhere around 500 to 600 million ounces of gold missing. Yes, missing. And at today's prices, at let's say an average of $1,500 an ounce, that's about $7.5 trillion. That's a lot of money. That's a tremendous amount of money. So that's just in gold. That could be leveraged many times over. It could be borrowed against, sometimes 10 to 1, depending on the amount of money that you're earning. So where did all the gold go? If it's on planet, somebody at that table has one heck of a pile of chips. One heck of a pile of chips. My guess is if the gold is on this planet, I have no idea who it's being held by. There's no time like the present to come out with that gold and take over the world. If you've got an idea, you know where this gold is being hidden, give us a call. 888-429-5471. And if you're anywhere else on planet or off planet, you can reach us at 530-413-4511. And I know you've been out there listening on the conference line. And by the way, we're streaming to you at 128 kilobytes, which means superb quality. BBS Radio has upgraded their servers, and that's why you're getting such a high quality sound for internet radio. I don't know if you've listened to AM radio lately, but it's sounding pretty bad. A lot of it's voice over IP. It's really tinny. It's like way, way down in the 36, 48 kilobyte range. really scratchy and tinny. The quality of internet radio is nowhere as high quality as it is right here on DBS Radio. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to be adding a DBS Radio affiliate link to X Squared Radio. So if you are a archive subscriber or you come to X Squared Radio to listen live, I highly encourage you to click on that BBS Radio affiliate link. Not only will you get the high quality audio and other great specials that we're going to bring to you throughout the year, video and other things, you can also make some money for yourself. That's right. That means that you could have steady money coming in. No, it may not be enough to make your mortgage payment, but it could be enough to take the edge off of things. Could be enough to keep that wolf a little further out in the yard. So we'll leave that here in the archive. You can touch base with us in a week or 10 days. And by the way, if you have any ideas on how to spread that far and wide, you can reach me at bagnew@x2-radio.com. You remember the little Spirit and Opportunity rovers that operated on Mars? One of them, I believe it was Opportunity, recently died, but Spirit is alive and well and still running, years and years and years after it was expected to die. Well, there's a new rover in town sometime between November 25th and December 18th, and we're gonna cover it right here on X Squared Radio. I'm going to have audio, and I'll have some audio from the videos on it here as soon as we get this sound problem fixed with our board, and I can bring it to you through my computer. NASA will launch its new rover to Mars. Now, this was a little bit like a Hummer compared to a smart car. That's the difference in size. It's much larger than the previous Mars rovers, Sojourner, Spirit, and Opportunity. This rover is called Curiosity, and it will take Martian surface exploration to an entirely new level. Spirit and Opportunity proved that liquid water once flowed across the red planet's surface, but Curiosity's suite of sophisticated science instruments will tell scientists whether those watery environments could have supported life as we know it. A former Project Science for the Mars Exploration Rover Project, Spirit and Opportunity, Dr. Crisp, female, brings many years of experience working with rover teams and studying Mars's surface and history. You know, Dr. Jim Bell with Cornell University headed up that program and ran it for a couple of years. We had him on the program here. Just a superb team of space explorers here. It doesn't get any better than this. The Curiosity probe marks a leap in rover technology without risking lives and at a fraction the price of a manned mission. We can explore other planets and asteroids and gather information about our universe. I only hope we take another interest in the moon, something a little closer to home. The wealth of natural resources on the moon would dwarf those found beneath the sands of Africa. I only hope that we don't have to fight anybody for them. My most sincere hope. I don't really know why we left the moon in 1972, why we left two perfectly good launch engines unused. I don't know. We've interviewed Dr. Mitchell and others. We've gotten ideas that maybe we were told to leave. There's no real solid evidence for that. But one thing's for sure, nobody's up there building a base on the moon. And it's in our own backyard. And I can tell you right now, he who controls the moon will control the earth. It's a natural satellite. It's got plenty of energy, plenty of resources. And I believe that if we make use of some of the lava vents on that orb, we can build an environment that will support life, that will work on the interior of the moon, protect you against all kinds of anything the sun can dish out, any kind of meteorites that could hit that little tiny thing out there. but it would give us the ability to monitor Earth from a natural satellite without having to worry about the orbit decaying. Speaking of orbits decaying, we had another satellite. I believe it should be coming in about, well, it came in about a week ago, but it had a 1,700-pound mirror on it that would have withstood reentry. Some people say that they tracked it, but it's unconfirmed. We just don't really know. It's called the ROSAT. It was built by Germany, launched in 1990, and it was managed quite well, but it died and the orbit decayed. And we're going to see a few more satellites in the next few months, this big or bigger, the size of a city bus, come apart and come heading into our atmosphere. So as we get prepared for this this shopping season and we start this election year, it is really going to be an interesting time because we got ideologies here that are squaring off against one another. It isn't just one political party against another political party. It's an ideology. We were sold on the idea that Obama and his administration were going to come in and they were going to steer us toward cleaner, renewable energy sources, that they were going to bring us electric vehicles, solar power, wind power, wave energy, better batteries, and certainly they've done that, but that this would be enough to get the jobs going. This would be enough to get the economy going. And I believe that it would have been, except for two things. Number one is that the stimulus funds that were approved and passed and collected were never distributed. Only about 30% of the money actually made it out of the agencies to small business that could actually, well, not even small business, to any kind of business that could do something with it. Roughly 65 to 70% of the funds are still stuck in the DOE, still stuck in the Department of Energy. They were never issued. The stimulus funds were never issued. That means that they can't do any good because they're still sitting in the bureaucracy of Washington, D.C. That's a little frustrating, that the funds never actually made it out in the form of offerings that small business, disadvantaged business, hub zone businesses, these are ones owned by American Indians, and certified small business, minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, veteran-owned businesses could access and be able to use that money to start up and hire people. Unfortunately, not a single penny of that money made it to small business. Unfortunately, the Department of Energy completely betrayed the trust of what was trying to be put forth. Now, can it be said that publicly there was one message and privately there was another action? It's so hard to tell. It's so hard to tell. If you ask those in Washington, you know, the White House had to get involved every single time a dollar was distributed to a questionable company. The Department of Energy has a long track record of dispensing money to billion-dollar multinational corporations that have a great track record of turning around and writing checks to the administration in power. Sorry, that's a fact. That's just the way it is. So that's the one thing. The other thing is that on the one hand, we've had an ideology trying to shift us away from dependency of foreign oil. Now, yes, we've heard this same speech since Carter. Every president since then said the same thing. We're addicted to oil. We need to get off foreign oil. We need to have more clean and renewable energy. Blah, blah, blah. We've heard the same thing. But nothing seems to be happening. We hear all the public rhetoric. We hear the saber rattling. We hear the sword hilt against the shields. We can hear the sound of hope out there. We can hear government standing up and saying, we'll take a risk with you. Get these electric trucks out on the market. Get these batteries into production. Get these windmills into production. Get these solar panels into place. Yes, we hear it. Every single day we hear it. But then we see the press turning around and saying everything that's green is corruptible. Corrupted. We hear the likes of Ann Coulter on Fox News. Every time she gets on, she cannot pass up the opportunity to say everything green is not practical. nothing is going to turn up. Nothing is going to work. Nothing is going to create jobs. None of this stuff is valuable whatsoever. The only thing we need to do is drill, baby, drill. That's what you hear. Everything that is green is corrupt. And they're going after solar companies. They're going after battery companies. They're going after electric vehicle companies. You've heard Fisker excoriated in the press recently. Why? Because he's manufacturing in Finland and not Delaware, where he bought that plant after Biden got him the money. Of course, that happens to be Biden's home turf. But hey, well, surely there's no connection here. Fisker simply said, sorry, guys, we're in the business of winning, not losing. The karma is going to go into production. We're going to make it and we're going to sell it. And we're going to pay back our $500 million loan. How about that? And it should be noted that Fisker is not in default. Fisker is current on everything. And they're getting ready to produce the car. Yes, it's going to be a little more expensive than our market can handle. But he's doing what he said he was going to do. So that's not corruption. No, it didn't create any jobs here. But what choice did he have? The regulations from the bureaucracies choked him down to where he had no choice whatsoever except to build in a foreign country. Now, there are companies that are struggling to get it done in this country. They're working every angle. They're paying off debts. They're working hard on side jobs. They're working for a dollar a year. The executives at Tesla are working for $1 a year. That means they're investors, people. That means they're contributing their time and their expertise. They're putting their livelihoods on the line for a company they believe in. Have they gotten any help from the government? No. In fact, the government has stepped in their way at every turn of the road, and that's why you don't see affordable electric vehicles on the road. And that's why you see solar panel companies going broke. Because try as they will, even though it appears the administration's trying to help them, the bureaucracies are against them. Somehow we've got to heal this rift. Somehow we've got to have organizations like the Department of Energy really be a Department of Energy. But you have to say, wait a minute. I hear the president saying one thing, but then I see the Secretary of Energy, Mr. Chu, who works for Obama, who was appointed by Obama, who's backed by Obama, who meets with Obama, who listens to Obama, doing the exact opposite. Killing small business. Killing them. Bleeding them out of fees and time and making them jump through hoops and delivering nothing to them. Nothing but no, 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 no. What can you say? How do you resolve this? I don't know. I don't know. I can tell you that agencies like the Department of Energy, the Department of Education, the EPA, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, I could go on and on and on, the TSA, I could go on and on. These agencies need to be dissolved. Put out of business. Close the doors. Turn the lights off. You're done. You're done. And by the way, leave the checkbook on the table when you leave. Has to happen. Has to happen, people. We cannot go on spending like we're spending. We can't go on piling up debt, borrowing money we don't have. And we're not going to write checks to all those people out there for Occupy America, Occupy Wall Street. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. The only way this can be fixed is if the money that would normally be spent on debt for the national debt is given back to the banks. I'll give it to them so they can loan it out to small business, so they can get inventory in their shops and they can get things moving again. That's the only way it's going to happen. It cannot happen any other way. It's a mathematical impossibility. That's the science of it, that's the math of it, that's the sociology of it, and no amount of rhetoric is going to change that. We got about 3 minutes left. We'll end this broadcast in 3 minutes. So if you want to make a quick call in, it's 888-429-5471. It has been my pleasure to be with you for the month of October. We've had 5 programs in October. It's one of the few months that we have a 5 Sundays. If you're going to dress up for work tomorrow in some kind of costume, make it a good one. Make it one they talk about all year long. And next year they say, oh, man, remember when you dressed up as... Yeah. Make it good. Make it humorous. And remember, you can turn the news off. You can make a positive change in all of this. You don't have to go down on the sidewalk and occupy Wall Street. You can do this with your consciousness. 15 minutes a week, that's all you got to do. Get in a meditative state, concentrate on the dream that you want to accomplish, and then listen for the universe to resonate with that. I promise you, it'll make a huge difference. Every day, look for the good in others and help it to grow a little bit. And before too long, you will have saved the planet. I appreciate you being part of X Squared Radio more than you know. We've been here since 2005. It's now 2011. Soon will be 2012. And you've been with us the entire time, and we've been with you. I appreciate it. I wouldn't be here without you. If you want to subscribe to an archive, it's a big help. It keeps the lights on, allows me to pay for my airtime, and makes it less of a hobby and more of something that pays for itself, which I can't tell you how much I appreciate. Please go about your day. Be the best that you can be. Do your best. Seek the best. Remember, you're only competing with yourself. So you might as well win. All right? Be good out there. We'll see you next Sunday right here on X Squared Radio.